to the Code Nibby podcast, where we talk to people on their coding journey in hopes of helping you on yours. I'm your host, Saran, and I want to tell you about some of our incredible sponsors. DigitalOcean's offering simple cloud hosting built for developers, and for all the code newbies who just started learning to code, yes, that means you. They've got one-click solutions for Rails, Django, Node, and much more, so you can launch your app in no time. And if you're looking for full control of your server, they've got that too. You can use the promo code CODENEWBIE and get a $10 credit, so check them out. Today on the show, I'm so excited to have designer and developer Julie Ann Horvath joining us. Julie, you want to say hi?
Yeah, I am super honored to be on CODENEWBIE. I have been really amazed at what you've grown out of the community and have really met some cool people through the community. So I'm really excited to be here.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, I love hearing those stories. That's great. So what I love about you, Julie, is that you bring together the world of design and code, right? You're head of design at Clef, but I know that you describe yourself as like the designer who codes, and you've played that role at a bunch of different companies that I think a lot of people have heard of, like Yammer and GitHub and a few other places. What came first for you? Was it design or was it code?
So it was actually coding. My first job in tech or at a startup was for Yammer. Really early on, there was probably only about 20 employees or so when I joined. And it was a really interesting experience because I feel like when you join a team that small, you kind of get called on to do a ton of different tasks. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was nowhere near coding. Like I had edited HTML and CSS in like MySpace profiles and AOL profiles back in the day. But I really didn't know that that could be a job, you know, like writing CSS. I didn't really know that was a thing. I just knew that I was really kind of fascinated or really enjoyed the satisfaction of like changing how something is published on the web. And so when I joined Yammer, I was actually just doing writing for them. I was writing like copy for the website.
Really?
So like random marketing tasks. Yeah. Really basic intern stuff. And I was in school at the time at USF in the city. And I was actually just broke. I just really needed a job and answered this ad for a data entry spot at Yammer at the time. And I feel, you know, really lucky in that way. Because it's kind of how I got my foot in the door. And I just kind of started asking for more and more responsibility. I was like, hey, you know, I'm a writing major. Can I, you know, contribute in, you know, I don't know, doing menial tasks? I remember one of the first tasks that I did was going through the Fortune 500 and finding out which companies were Yammer customers and Yammer users. And like putting together sort of like an analysis of that data, which was really interesting. And that was like one of my first like projects there. So it was like really like kind of menial tasks, but I just kept throwing my hand up in order to take on more responsibility to sort of prove myself in that environment. And then we hired this. So I was officially on the marketing team at the time, and we hired this amazing senior designer. Her name's Arya Shin. She is from the ad world. So she worked primarily in advertising, doing some smaller web things. But it was her first big web company or working for one. And so she didn't really know, you know, a lot about HTML and CSS. And so there were a couple of things that the marketing team really wanted to get on the web, but didn't really have access to resources, like engineering resources, to make it happen. So I sort of put my hand up and said, you know, like, I can figure out this, like, coding stuff. Like, I can figure out at least how to get like a static thing, either, you know, through an HTML email or, you know, like a really basic landing page, using like all these different marketing tools that allow you to create landing pages. And so I ended up learning to code way before I think I considered myself a designer. Design is one of those really weird things where when do you become a designer? You know, like, when can you say that you're a designer? For me, I didn't go to school to become one. And so it was a really weird journey for me getting to where I am now, as far as like when I started considering myself a professional at design. Coding was a really big part of that too. Like, I started coding in order to sort of help my marketing team out, but then really fell in love with it. And just happened to also really love the design, like the front end design aspects of that. So I ended up doing both of those things, just how I kind of landed in that middle ground of design and code. So I definitely learned to code first. I learned to write HTML and CSS. And then I sort of trained my eye for design, I guess.
So when you answered that data entry position, was the plan, you know, I'm going to get into this tech thing and then slowly move my way to being on the technical team? Was that like an intentional?
Oh my God, no.
Really? So it just happened?
No, not at all. Yeah. I mean, well, like once I was there, I kind of realized, wow, I really like, you know, I liked the access aspect of working for a startup. Like I really liked that, you know, you could build anything and show it to the CEO, you know, and get credit for that thing. Or you could, you know, you could really make anything happen with code. And I really liked that aspect of it. And so it's kind of what drew me into it. I really liked the feeling of shipping things. Mm-hmm. I really loved that, I don't know, birth, if you will. And kind of fell in love with it. I mean, I honestly was just really broke. I had to, you know, I come from a pretty disadvantaged background. And I was living off of student loans at the time that I was so lucky to even have student loans. Like I had gotten one of my mom's like friends from high school to like co-sign on my student loans. And that was like the only way I got to go to college, essentially. But I was living off my student loans and it wasn't really enough as far as like, you know, eating and having all the things I needed. And so I was like, wow, I really need a job. And, I remember my best friend, who's still my best friend now, who's gotten to watch this journey as well. And she just laughs all the time about it. She brought home, she was working at the Career Services Center and I was looking for a job and she would like bring me home things and say, hey, like, have you checked out this? Have you checked out that? You should apply for this. And she knew I was kind of geeky all the time. Like I really loved computers. I really loved the internet. I was a really, early, you know, user of just like consuming online content and like online art, especially like a very early Tumblr early user, like, really into just, millennials and like us publishing our own art and our own writing online and like very much a part of my vibe, I guess. And so she knew I was really into that stuff. So she brought me home this ad that the tech company or that Yammer had posted about needing data entry. And it's funny because their plan actually was basically to hire us for 2 weeks and then fire us all.
Oh, wow. Wow. Did they tell you that up front?
No, it was like it was basically a job for like a Mechanical Turk. And so, which is basically, it's just like something you could write a program for, but it would take a shorter amount of time to just hire someone for temp. It was temp work for sure. And I mean, they were always like really transparent about it being temp work, but, I don't know. Yeah. But yeah. So I decided that it was going to be, you know, once I was there and I really liked the atmosphere, it was really nerdy. I felt really comfortable there for the first time. Like, I remember when I was younger and getting like my first job and stuff, probably like around 16 or 17. I remember having like this emotional breakdown because I was going to an interview and I felt so like, I don't know. I felt so unprepared for it. You know what I mean? Like it was like at a shopping mall or something. It like wasn't like, you know, a big deal. But I remember just like not feeling like I was really awkward when I was a teenager. Like I didn't know how to put on makeup to make me look normal. And like I didn't really like I was like pretty ghetto. So like I didn't like know how to like talk like, you know, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Like I didn't really know what was appropriate for a professional environment. I didn't grow up being taught those things and like certainly didn't learn them in my school. So like it was I always felt very like blocked by that. And so I remember having like this crisis where I didn't know what to wear. Like I just started crying and my best friend had to like dress me and like put my makeup on and like tell me it would be okay, you know? And I don't think I was ever like stupid. Like I was always fairly intelligent. And so I was like, of course I was going to get that job at the shopping mall. But in my mind, it seemed so unattainable based on, you know, my surroundings. And so I, definitely kind of felt like the same way about this Yammer job. I remember it was really funny. I was lost. I didn't know a lot about San Francisco. I had just started school at USF after 2 years at a junior college. And so I grew up in the East Bay, like Oakland, Hayward area, but I just didn't know, like I didn't do a lot of exploring in San Francisco when I was younger. It just seemed like a faraway place that no one went to. And so I didn't really know my way around. And when I was going for the interview at Yammer, I got lost.
Oh, no.
And I just remember feeling, and I think a lot of people who, you know, come from disadvantaged backgrounds kind of feel like this, but you kind of feel like every opportunity you get is your last one. Like you have to make it work because the next one might not come, you know? And so I used to, if I could look back and tell a younger version of me anything, I would just say that, you know, it's going to be okay and it'll work out. And, you know, if you miss this opportunity, there will be a next one. But everything back then just felt so catastrophic, you know? And so I remember getting lost and thinking I was going to be late. And so I got off the bus probably at like 5th and Powell or something, like really like downtown Market area, and just ran. I was like, okay, I think this is where I'm going. And I just like ran with like in like full, like I was wearing all black and it was like not like super nice, but I was definitely trying to look nice. I was wearing flats and I just like sprinted to this office in like long sleeves because I had tattoos on my arm. So I was like very scared that like people wouldn't hire me based on my tattoos, which is stupid now that I think about where tech is, you know. But back then, it just everything about me back then, I felt like I had to hide, you know. And tattoos are a bad example of that. That's a very superficial thing when compared to, you know, other things and other experiences. But it was just like, it just felt like life or death. And I remember just sprinting to that office, and I got there and they weren't stressed out about it at all. I think there was like several other data entry positions being interviewed for, so there was like a lot of people around, but I was like drenched in sweat.
Oh, no.
And the first thing the receptionist says to me is like, "Do you want a bottle of water?" I'm like, "Yeah, I would really like that. Thank you." So I ended up getting the job and convincing them to keep me around. They ended up keeping me and like one other woman around for the data. We both ended up working on the marketing team and doing very different things. Eventually she moved to sales and I moved to doing more technical stuff, like all of the HTML and CSS stuff for the marketing team, which is really fun. But yeah, so that's the origin story of me getting into tech. It's a total accident. And I just decided once I was there that I was staying. So
good for you. When did you decide that?
I think it was, I don't know. I mean, it seemed so obvious to me that tech was a place where you could grow really quickly. Once I was in it, like, it's weird because when you're not in the tech industry, it actually feels really inaccessible. It feels like, oh, you have to be like this genius, this prodigy, you know. The media certainly doesn't help with that image, but it seems really inaccessible. But then once you are at a tech company and you see that there's a lot of room for growth, and especially like as far as like career advancement, it can happen really quickly. And for me, like, I've always felt really behind in that. Like, I never had like a dad or mom to like give me an internship at their company, you know, like there's never really been an opportunity for me. And so I really have felt behind a lot of my life, especially with regards to education. And so it looked really appealing to me because I felt like, okay, you know, if I just work really hard, you know, if I like put in the hours, if I can fake the language and, you know, like just like fit in, yeah, like I felt like I could really, learn and grow quickly and like get, you know, kind of catch up, I guess, in a way to like where I felt, you know, other people who do have access to those things at a younger age could be. And that's the thing I really love about coding is like you, there's still a lot of disadvantages when it comes to like having people to point you in the right direction and like paying for online resources. There's a ton of what I feel is disparity as far as like access to online education with regards to tech. But I do feel that there is a lot more sharing of knowledge and open community discussions. I mean, look at Code Newbie. Like, this is something that, you know, is totally organic. And the fact that people have access to it when they're just getting started is, like, amazing. And I don't feel like that's the case in any other industry. Mm-hmm. And so I think for me, seeing those things and being able to, like, or making those observations, it became really clear to me that, you know, this was a place that I thought I could succeed and like should succeed. And so I decided to stay. I was just like, and I really loved coding. I also really loved just like the satisfaction again of like seeing something ship that I made and it going on the internet and people looking at it and like feeling really like proud of that, yep. You know, and like it really felt like magic. And for me, it's the closest thing that I'll ever get to do that feels like magic. So it's like a feeling I'm addicted to, and it's a feeling that I love and that I think more people should have access to. And so that's, you know, it's kind of why I'm here, and it's kind of why I do a lot of the stuff that I do. It's like a pretty big driving force, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when I made that decision to stay, to stick around.
Yeah, and I'm very glad that you did. Thank you for that. So I want to go back to something you said where, coming from a disadvantaged background, you felt like this next opportunity might be the last opportunity. And it reminds me of this episode from This American Life that I heard recently called 3 Miles. Have you heard of it by any chance?
I've heard of This American Life. I have not seen the 3 Miles.
Okay. You should totally listen to it. It's really, really good. And basically what it does is it compares the experiences of students who went to a very, you know, rich, preppy private school and students who were in a very, very disadvantaged community and came from a not so great neighborhood and not a great school. And it highlights a couple people's stories. And one of the women it talks about, and she mentions, you know, that she was able to get out and she was able to end up getting a really good job and she's moving forward in her career. She's reaching all her milestones. But the struggle that she has the whole time is feeling like she doesn't actually deserve it. And I'm wondering, as you, I mean, you're pretty successful. I think you know this, but you know, you're pretty successful. You've spoken lots of places. You've done a lot of really good things for this community. People definitely know who you are. And I'm wondering, coming from that background, do you feel like you deserve it? Is that something that you've struggled with?
It's totally something that I've struggled with. It actually kind of makes me a little emotional. Yeah, I mean, the thing about growing up without, you know, without a lot, I guess, is there's this idea planted in your head that, you know, if, well, since I have nothing, I must not deserve, like, I must not deserve anything, you know? And I remember, you know, and not only that, but I mean, your teachers, your, a lot of the times your parents, you know, people in your life are telling you that, like, they're, and that's the sad, sort of the sad truth about it is, if you get told that you are worthless your entire life, it takes a lot of undoing to, you know, undoing of that and positive reinforcement for you to believe that you are worth, you know, worth success, worth love. You know, yeah, it's been one of my biggest struggles, I think, in life for sure. And I mean, I'm just getting to the point where, you know, I really like the person I am and believe that, you know, I deserve to be happy in a lot of ways. And I think, you know, and I'm about to be 27. And so like, it's kind of like, it's a funny, it's just a part of your journey. And I think for a long time, I felt really resentful about that and bitter about that. I was like, you know, why do I have to deal with, you know, this feeling of not being good enough when all these other people get to kind of live carefree, I guess. And I think I've gotten to the point now in my career and my life where I'm just trying to find peace with where I am and who I am as a person. But for a lot of years, yeah, I mean, I spent a good, like, probably a good, like, my first 2 years in therapy, I'm pretty sure I spent just like my therapist just giving me compliments and me crying. Mm-hmm. And that was just like, and that's ridiculous, right? Like, it's so ridiculous. Like, it actually, and I still see this, you know, a lot. I actually feel more emotionally moved and upset when people compliment me than when they say negative things to me. And it's a really interesting psychological thing that happens, but it's just like this, you know, it takes, you know, years and years and years of, you actually having to like accept that you deserve that happiness and that love and like that success. It's pretty crazy, actually. It's pretty crazy. And everyone has sort of their own journey, right? Like, and I've accepted that that's just a part of mine. And, you know, and it's funny, I have these talks with my mom a lot, actually, because she feels so bad. She feels like there's more, you know, that she could have done for me as a kid to give me, you know, happiness and like a stable home and everything like that. But, you know, I just tell her, you know, I wouldn't change who I am for the world. Like, I wouldn't want to be anybody else. And I think I've just gotten to that point in my life where I feel that way. And it's kind of really, it's so cathartic in a way, actually, to just feel like, you know, yeah, all this happened to me, but it also like, was all fundamental in making me who I am, and makes me able to like deal with adversity, and it makes me like a secure person, and it makes me, you know, there's all these positive effects out of it. So yeah, it's a lifelong journey, I feel like.
For sure.
And one that, you know, doesn't always feel the greatest. But yeah, I definitely kind of still see effects of it in my everyday life. And you pretty much just have to build up this voice that tells you you're good enough, mm-hmm. in spite of, you know, the other voice in your head that's constantly telling you you're not.
So what I find most incredible about you is that despite those disadvantages, despite feeling, you know, like you don't deserve it, you still seem to take the actions that get you to move ahead, right? Despite those demons and those voices, you still, you know, went to Yammer for a 2-week temp job that became really this lifelong career, hopefully lifelong career, you know, in code and in design. How were you able to see past those voices and that mentality and those struggles and still keep up that momentum and do the things you needed to do to get to where you are now?
I kind of felt like I had to. I never felt like failure was an option. You know, I kind of see failure as being this privilege that I've just kind of never been afforded. And I'm like, now realistically, I look at my life and I can sort of afford to fail. Like, I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not doing fantastic, but like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I have more of a buffer than I have at any other point in my life. But back then, and you know, until fairly recently, and I mean, I still feel this way a lot, actually, that like failure just isn't an option for me and for the people who come after me. Like my biggest thing is trying to use, you know, what privilege I do have to kind of open up the door for more women like me who come from my community, you know, who are women of color, who, you know, haven't had, you know, access to great education and, you know, didn't get to go to college or maybe like are struggling through college. And I think that's a pretty big motivation, honestly. I think that keeps me in my lane, I guess, like as far as like needing to be successful and needing to make moves that are strategic and smart and who that will open more doors for women like me, because that's the biggest thing to me is like, I don't know, I look at my success and I can't help but think, you know, for a long time I was like, wow, like, you know, like, I, you know, I'm one of the only people from my community who made it to, you know, this highly visible place in their career, mm-hmm. With a lot of like a objective success. And, you know, for a long time I was like, wow, you know, I'm just so lucky and like, it's just luck, you know, like I just ran through the door when it opened. Mm-hmm. But then I think about it and I'm like, oh, I'm also one of my only friends who's white passing. Mm. So... So sometimes I look at that and, you know, it, you know, for initially, because this is how we kind of deal with being vulnerable with ourselves. Like initially I like wanted to reject that notion and I want to say, no, like I worked for everything I have. And like, I really want to reject that. But I think more importantly, what that observation does is it makes me use that, you know, white passing privilege to use my voice for good in order to make it more welcoming for people who don't have that privilege. You know what I mean? Like, because it's funny, I think back to like my community and growing up with like all my friends and I'm like, wow, like my friends were just so creative, you know, like they were so creative and so smart. And I look at some of the people in tech and I'm like, my friends are just as smart as you, you know, like yeah.
Sometimes smarter.
Like, why are you? Yeah. Sometimes a lot of times smarter and more creative. And so I look at these people and I'm like, why are you here? And why aren't my friends here? You know? And I think a lot of it has to do with access and a lot of it has to do with the ability to code switch and infiltrate and like, you know, have your feet in two different, you know, worlds at the same time. And I mean, a lot of that kind of just comes down to white privilege. And yeah, so I mean, I think one of my biggest motivations as far as like grabbing the baton or like making decisions when I need to make decisions is like thinking about all of those people who didn't have the opportunities that I had and thinking about what is going to make tech a more welcoming place and a place that everyone from every type of background has access to, regardless of where they went to school, you know, what their home life was like, you know, what their ethnic background is like. Like, I want to make tech a place that's more representative of the world I come from.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that desire is a burden at all? Does it weigh on you?
It can be exhausting, but it is probably the most pure thing in my life, honestly. the love for my community and the, and it's funny, you know, it's kind of weird because I talk to a lot of people about just like how they feel about, you know, how connected they are to where they came from and what responsibility they feel. And, you know, honestly, a lot of people in tech don't think about it. Like they don't, there's not really like this overwhelming sense of needing to give back to their communities. But it's interesting because I was talking to my mentee, Manisha, who you've met, and she's at Cal now studying computer science. And it's funny because we both have that feeling. Like, and I'm wondering if it's just like coming from a really diverse community and kind of seeing the disparity on a really, you know, on a really large scale, like at, you know, in tech and in at Cal where she is now, that makes us feel like, no, like we need to fight for our community. And like, we need to, we have, there's a responsibility there. And it's not necessarily a burden, but it's a privilege. Like, honestly, like, I think it's a privilege to fight for my community and to fight for other women who come after me. I mean, a lot of people always, you know, it's funny, like, I feel like people always kind of question my motive for, you know, being so vocal about my experiences in tech. But it's never even a question when I think about whether or not it will stop, you know, the next Julie or the next Manisha from mm-hmm. having to go through what I've been through, you know. It's never a question. It's not a choice. I absolutely have to do it because if not me, then who? And so, and I mean, that's not necessarily like a savior or a martyr thing. Like I could care less about being a martyr, but it's more about I have the access to these things and I have the voice and the platform. I need to speak up about these things because if I don't, it'll be that much harder for those who come after me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was just so well put.
Thank
that was
you.
Really good. I like that. So when I think about, you know, you have always been such a vocal supporter and an advocate for minorities or people of color, for women in tech, for people who come from disadvantaged communities. And when I think back to last year with, you know, all that happened at GitHub, I can imagine that hurting a little bit more because you've always been this voice, this huge advocate. And I'm wondering, how did what happened there, and I don't know how comfortable you are talking about that, how did that experience affect your, you know, this role that you just described of having to speak out and having to, you know, be that voice? Because if not you, then who?
Honestly, I don't think it affected, I think I've always been someone who is willing to speak up. And I don't think it affected that as much as it did my personal growth. I went through a tremendous, during that time, like I learned so much about myself. And I think I grew just like, I just feel like a totally different person from then, honestly, as far as like how I approach life. And I mean, in a positive way, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I wouldn't say that like it affected whether or not I'm willing to speak up, but more so in how strategic I am about it and like where I could be most useful. I've been trying to kind of think that out. And also like that I don't need to be the voice all the time. I think that's the biggest thing that I've learned is that I don't need to be the voice. I can use my platform to sort of raise the voices of other people to talk about, you know, how what their experiences are and what their feelings are. And also just try to point out that there's no like good and bad. I think a lot of people get caught up in this idea that like, of like sort of binary constructs, right? Of like, mm-hmm. oh, well, like this person is good or and this person is bad, or this company is good and this company is bad. Like that doesn't really exist. Like mm-hmm. people are just
I wish
people.
It did. It'd be so much easier.
Right? It would be decision-making would be so much easier. But it, I think the important thing to remember, you know, is that humans are just humans and we like all make mistakes and we've all treated people badly in our lives. And like, I've been trying to be really vocal about the idea that there is no really like there's no good and bad. There just is. And the important conversations that need to happen in tech just need to happen. And it's not really about vilifying anybody or, you know, shame, public shaming or anything like that. It's more just about there being more conversations about things in tech and more voices being a part of those conversations. And I think that's the biggest thing that I learned after my experience at GitHub and leaving was that, you know, it's not just no one is good or bad, no company is good or bad, but it's more about a company, its team, and who is given a voice in our industry. like who gets to talk about issues, who gets to be a part of the conversation. And I think my motivation around like speaking out and being vocal about a lot of the issues in tech with regards to ethnicity and gender are a little more focused these days on not so much just the women in tech movement, because I think that it can be a little exclusive and not intersectional at all, which is really frustrating for me considering my background. But I think I'm just trying to kind of gear the conversation or turn the conversation more to be representative of a ton of different voices and point out that there isn't just like one or like five women in tech you should follow on Twitter. There isn't just, there's all these ridiculous lists, you know, that Business Insider comes up with and all these things, you know. It's not about making those lists, because that's just another check box on someone's, you know, like checkmark lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I want it to be more like holistic and more organic. I want there to be just more representation of all these different types of voices who have different experiences, because they're all valid. And I think we need to, as an industry, stop invalidating certain people's experiences because we buy into others. Like, there doesn't need to be like this binary good, bad thing happening. I think we just need to listen more and be more empathetic as like an industry. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that I've learned. From my experience at GitHub and just like going public and sort of like this giant platform that I've accumulated over the last few years, which has been just kind of wild to me in general. But I'm just trying to use it to do something for people who aren't being represented, I guess, in the conversations. And it's so much bigger than us now, right? Like, the thing that's really interesting is the tech industry is like building these tools that have felt so tech-centric, like, or, you know, central to like our tech communities, people who code, people who design. But it's so much more than, like, so much more is on the line now when you think about stuff like social justice and like things like the Black Lives Matter movement. Like, so much more is on the line that we almost have to cross lines that we aren't comfortable crossing inside of our industry in order to help raise the voices of people outside of our industry. So, I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about that and trying to, I don't know, not necessarily like forgive and forget, but think about the larger or the more important conversation that needs to happen outside of just white feminism in tech, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I'm at as far as like moving away from, in my journey away from the last few years, I guess. But I've learned a lot, but mostly that like there are bigger things to that we all need to address and talk about and have conversations about and destroy in a lot of ways. So
when it comes to being more inclusive and listening and, you know, having lots of different perspectives at the table, since you've been in tech, do you feel like we're going in the right direction?
Some days I feel like we have taken a massive step forward, and then others, I feel like we have taken three steps back. Mm. And that's the thing about like social activism. It can be really exhausting because there's really no way to measure it, right? Mm. I mean, we've tried to do it in tech. Like, we've tried to say, okay, like release your diversity demographics, you know, but you can hire a bunch of people of color, but are they, you know, do they have a voice at your company? Are you listening to them? You know, like, how do you measure that? Like, how do you measure their impact on the company culture? How do you, and the simple answer is there's no simple answer, I guess. I don't know. I hope so. Like, I see there being more conversations. I see more conversations happening.
That's good.
And I think that's one thing that makes me really happy. Mm-hmm. I've personally been connected to like way more women and people like me, which I feel, I'm like, where have you been? You know, I'm just like really excited about that, you know, like that's definitely something I'm personally excited about, but I don't know that that's for everyone, you know. I was recently in so it's actually really interesting. When I was running the Talk Series Passion Projects, I got connected to this documentary crew that was shooting a movie about the lack of female programmers or women programmers in tech. And it just so like they started interviewing me and they're like, hey, we would love to like talk more to you. And I was actually filming with them when, a lot of the GitHub stuff broke. And so it was kind of interesting because they caught a lot of that happening by total accident. Like, I had, yeah, by total accident. But it was a really interesting process. And they recently finished the documentary and they've been showing it at a few, and it's not just me. I mean, they interviewed a ton of different women from our industry, like leaders like Dick Costello and just like an insane amount of people who represent our industry. And so the film just started showing. And I honestly think that in itself is going to be huge as far as like kind of bringing more awareness to both the gender and ethnicity issues in tech. Mm-hmm. I think watching it gave me chills and it kind of really made me feel like it's hard to piece together everything that's happened in the last 5 years, just like on Twitter or from like a series of articles, you know, like I think Geek Feminism tries to do it. Like they have like a timeline of something, but it feels very incomplete because you can't really capture the feeling, like what people are feeling at a given moment in that way. I think the documentary does a really good job of kind of showing what our industry has been through in the last 5 to 10 to 20 years. And I think something like that is going to have a really big impact on people both in the industry now who are like doing hiring and learning to code and all and like going to like, you know, hackathons and doing all these like very tech oriented things. But I also think it's going to have a dramatic impact on kids that are thinking about maybe, you know, taking up a career in tech or going to major in computer science in school, or maybe they haven't even heard of computer science, but they'll watch this documentary and then be inspired to be part of like a part of the change. And so that's something I'm very hopeful about. And I think watching that made me feel like there has been a dramatic change or a dramatic shift in representation of minorities and women in tech, but I'm not totally sure how I feel about it. Some of it, like some of it feels kind of disingenuous, you know, like some of it feels like people are talking about diversity for the sake of talking about it because everyone else is talking about it, you know, and sometimes it feels like it's more about building a brand than it is about, you know, recognizing the voices of marginalized people. And so it's very difficult to know, you know, what's real and what's not. But I mean, I can just, all I have is like hope. Mm-hmm. And some optimism, a little cynicism, because that's healthy. But I definitely am hopeful. And I mean, I see it in these girls that I know. Like I, the way that I met the girl that I mentor is I coached my high school's cross country team when I was in college. And I had like this amazing group of like really smart, stubborn girls that I became really close with, and they were all on my team, and I kind of continued to mentor them even after I stopped coaching them. And they've gone on to do some pretty amazing things. A big group of them are at Cal now studying, which is amazing if you know anything about like coming from like a school that's not so prep school. But they've made some pretty big leaps, and it's been really amazing to watch. But just seeing them and how they're approaching tech and thinking about working in the industry and how comfortable they feel because, you know, because they feel like they have the upper hand because I've prepared them in a lot of ways for that. But just seeing them be optimistic about it and be like, and have the attitude of like, well, why not me, has been really refreshing because I don't think I had that attitude coming into tech at all. I think I felt really scared. And so seeing them kind of have more confidence and feel like, yeah, I can do this, I think has made me feel like we've made significant strides in the last like 5 or 6 years or so.
What's the name of the documentary?
It's called Code Doc.
Code Doc. Huh, that makes sense. Is it out yet?
So it is out. They are doing the festival circuit right now, so they can't actually release it, but they just released that. They did a press release saying that you could now screen it at schools and companies. Like you can do private screenings with streaming. So I'm really excited about that. I'm hoping to organize a screening of it here in the East Bay somewhere. They've been, oh my God, yeah, it would be amazing. Hopefully a free one so that students could come and stuff. Mm-hmm. But hoping to organize something like that. But again, the whole like activism and organizing things is like definitely can feel like a lot sometimes when you also have like a full-time job, which is another thing that I feel it needs to be addressed in tech, since we, you know, so many people are being called on to do diversity work and to, you know, write about, speak about, and give advice or consult on, you know, how to build a more inclusive industry. But what a lot of people don't realize is we have day jobs also. And so a lot of times, a lot of people of color and women are being asked to do, you know, twice as much work as anyone else. And so a lot of the what I see as being interesting conversation happening right now is around like, well, actually, like, how do we more evenly distribute that work? And are women being compensated for doing that work specifically?
Oh, that's interesting. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something that I want to talk more about with people. And it's something I want to, you know, I bring up internally to my founders all the time is like, is the work being fairly distributed amongst our whole team? So that's a really interesting thing. The documentary is awesome, and they are just doing like the festival circuit right now, so they can't actually release it to any theaters because there's like all these like agreements between film festivals and stuff. I don't really understand it all, but it's really good. It's really well done. I was really nervous about being in it because, you know, you kind of give your image to somebody and you're like, here, do whatever you want with
it. That's why I like being the one asking the questions.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's a very, you get to edit. Like, I would never wish that work on myself, but at the same time, it's like super nerve wracking not knowing, you know, what's going to be on the other end of that. You just kind of have to trust people and trust that, you know, you gave your best answers, which is a whole other thing. But yeah, it was I saw the documentary for the first time recently, and it was like both really cathartic and really traumatic. So I think it'll be really good as far as like starting conversations and that whole thing.
So going back to last year when, you know, all that stuff happened at GitHub, and, you know, for anyone who's curious, there are lots of articles written about it, so you can check that out. But I imagine that you maybe had different expectations for your next place of work, right? Having left a hostile work environment, and kind of, I'm wondering how that affected what you looked for in your next job and your next team. What was that like?
Oh man, that was hard. I think that when you go through a situation like I did and you experience a lot of hostility in your workplace, you suffer a lot of like post-traumatic stress. And that really kind of, you look at things very differently once you leave, and there's a lot of things that are triggering for you. And, you know, you may have one conversation at your next job that like just scares you because you see, you know, the same thing happening as your previous workplace or something like that, you know? So I definitely experienced a lot of post-traumatic stress. As far as like looking for what I was looking for was, I just wanted to be heard, I think, in a company. And, I, you know, made that really clear when I was interviewing with people. I definitely looked for, you know, I mean, and this is a couple of jobs later. I wanted, you know, really good management. I think one of the biggest flaws that I saw with the GitHub organization was there was no hierarchy. And I don't know if you've heard of the tyranny of structurelessness, but it's like a feminist principle that states, you know, in a room full of people without any hierarchy, the people that tend to, you know, dominate the conversations or have the most power are those who are the most loud and who most accurately fit the status quo. And so what that means for marginalized folks is that, you know, we're out, basically. And so, you know, for me, I wanted hierarchy was a really important thing to me, for there to be like a clear management role and that person to be responsible, you know, for a certain number of things. And so I looked for that. I also looked for people of color. Like, that's like a really, like, you know, I mean, a lot of people can talk about diversity all they want or until they're blue in the face. You know, but hiring people at a really early stage startup and giving them a significant stake in your company is really what does the talking to me personally. And so, you know, Clef, where I am now, our first two employees were people of color. Our first engineer, was a woman of color. So like, that was a really big sign saying not only, you know, women and people of color aren't just allowed in the business and marketing, you know, like, no, it's like your technical, I want to see, you know, representation across all teams and on your technical teams as well. I definitely wanted to be paid in a fair way. I wanted to receive a fair amount of equity in my new position, which was really important to me at, you know, an early stage startup. So I mean, those were all things that I thought were really important. And I have all those things in my new job. I will say that there is no perfect company, especially when it comes to startups. Like, the most you can hope for, honestly, like, nothing is going to be perfect. you're still going to face dealing with microaggressions. You're still going to, face dealing with sort of like a male fragility thing or a male ego fragility thing for sure. I feel like all these things come up regardless of where you end up. But the difference, the biggest difference for me in the company I work at now and GitHub is like people are listening. You know what I mean? Like that's the most important thing to me is that when I have an issue, it's addressed. Especially, you know, when it comes to things like race and identity and gender. Like I think having, you know, someone dismiss you and tell you something like, which is really common when people bring up microaggressions at work, is they tell you, oh, toughen up, or they tell you,
it's just a joke.
You should just be less sensitive. Yeah, just lighten up, like be less sensitive, you know, which is not appropriate, in my opinion. And so I think for me, it's really important for me to find a team that understood that those things are sensitive and that they should be dealt with in that way. And so, you know, one thing that I try to tell people is just like no company is perfect, but like if you're surrounded by people who are willing to listen and be empathetic, then I think that's a start.
So I'm sure there are people listening who may have experienced a hostile work environment or be in one, and particularly in tech. I'm wondering, what advice do you have for them on how they can deal with it and how they can hopefully, you know, try to avoid being in that type of environment in the future?
My number one piece of advice is document everything, like every single thing. That's one thing I regret not doing as well when I was, you know, at GitHub. I repeatedly told myself, you know, it's going to get better. It's going to get better, you know, but now looking back, I wish I had just like screenshotted everything. I really wish I had to protect myself, you know, and to be able to point at concrete examples of when I was mistreated. And I think that's the biggest thing is like people cannot ignore you or dismiss you if you have proof of, you know, someone being hostile towards you or creating a hostile work environment for you. And I think that's a really important thing for everyone to do for themselves. I think it's a form of self-care and self-protection, especially if you're, you know, if you come from a disadvantaged background and like you don't have a big cushion to sit on, you should absolutely be sort of like protecting yourself. And I know it's going on the offensive a little bit, but I think it's worth it. And it's something I regret not doing better as a younger person just entering our industry. Would have made for one hell of a book, you know? that I would say, talk to someone who's objective, who outside of the company, if you can see a therapist and just address some of your concerns, you know, for a gut check, for being like, hey, you know, how should I handle this? One thing that, I ended up doing is seeking therapy while I was at GitHub. And it was really actually helpful because it wasn't so much, you know, like, how do you feel? It's more about giving you like really usable like formulas for how to deal with conflict and problems that come up in your workplace. And I think that's a really, it's a really great way to protect yourself as well, but to also just know that you're going to deal with difficult people and they're going to come in all shapes, sizes, and forms. And so having, you know, an objective person to go and talk to and to maybe give you, you know, a little bit of advice about maybe how to approach the situation with care and caution, I think that's really, really, really helpful and really beneficial, not just for that job, but career-wise, I think. Something that I wish I had started doing much sooner in my career. Because regardless of where you end up, you're always going to, like, you're never going to love your entire team. Like, you're always, you know, there's always going to be some sort of conflict because that's just the byproduct of working with people, like, especially a diverse team. And that's the funny thing is, like a lot of people assume, oh, well, if we hire a diverse team, like, everyone will just get along, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, no, like, if anything, it's the opposite because they have so, you know what I mean? If everyone is coming from a different place, it's much harder to connect and communicate. And so you almost have to do more work in trying to build those relationships, which is absolutely worth it because I think the end product is a lot better than working with like an all white male team, for example. But I do think it takes more work and just really being prepared to do that work and know when you're being treated fairly. Like everyone on that team should be doing the same amount of work and not just you. And I think that's a fair ask for you to ask of your teammates. Therapy, you know, if you have access to it, is a really great tool. And then also just documenting everything, seeking legal counsel when you can. Most employment lawyers, you know, if some of them are seeking out lawsuits. And so like doing a consultation with them and just kind of trying to see where, you know, where your situation is a really smart thing to do, I think. And it's also something I wish I had done a lot sooner. Yeah, those are probably the best things. And then honestly, like, just always be looking for a new job. There's nothing.
That's such good advice.
There's nothing harmful in that. And in people, the thing is, in tech, like, people will make you feel like you're doing something dirty by, you know what I mean? Like, they'll be like, you're being unfaithful to your job. No, like, oh, it's a game.
I hate that so much. Like, oh, you're not being very loyal. Like, that's not what this is about.
This is a job. This is a transaction.
Right.
Like, this has nothing to do with, it's not personal. And I don't think you're doing anything wrong. Looking for a job, just keeping your ears open and like your ear to the ground or whatever it is, I think is a really smart move. And it's another great way to protect yourself. And I think just reminding yourself that, like, regardless of how, you know, friendly you get with people in the industry, like, there are no friends out here, really. I mean, like, I've made some really good friends in the industry, but like, as far as work goes, like, look out for yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, definitely look out for yourself, because I don't think, you know, I come from a really place where people look out for each other and have each other's backs. I wouldn't say that exists in our industry quite yet. And I think it's pretty cutthroat. And I think it's, I think looking out for yourself and taking care of yourself should be a priority always.
Mm-hmm. So what I love about your journey is you've gone through a lot, like in a pretty short amount of time in this industry. You've worked at, you know, startups that we've heard of, bigger organizations that we've heard of. You've done freelancing for a short bit. You're working at a startup as head of design right now. And you did that while being primarily a self-taught developer, in that you don't have a CS degree, didn't go through like a formal education process. And I think a lot of people listening can really relate to that. And I'm wondering, as you're navigating and, you know, deciding the next move, the next company, what are some things that you're thinking about? What are some things that are really important to you that really apply to our CodeNibby community?
I think some things that I'm always thinking about, or generally thinking about, is just like, there's no right way to do something when it comes to code. I mean, obviously there are some things that are objectively right and wrong. But I think that a lot of, you know, when I was just learning stuff, like, a lot of people came to me and they would say, like, oh, this is the way you do this, or this is the way you do this. And I mean, if I was, you know, to kind of give one piece of advice to anybody who's just getting into this and being, you know, as a self-taught person, especially, there isn't any right way to do this. I mean, there's an efficient way to do something. There's an expensive way to do something. There's, you know, and, I think it's really important to give yourself a break sometimes and realize that, like, you'll figure it out. You'll get there. And that, just don't let anyone make you feel like you're less than them, or less, you know, that you're not good enough because you don't do something exactly like they do. And that's the thing that I love about working with computers in general and writing code, is that you can, the concept of hacking is so interesting to me. Like, not hacking as in like Angelina Jolie hacking, but like just the idea that you can solve a problem a million different ways is really interesting to me. And I think that's something people don't talk about enough. And I think it tends to push newcomers out of our industry really quickly because they feel like, oh, well, I'm not smart enough, or I'm not, you know, I didn't solve this problem in this way, so therefore I'm not good enough to be a programmer. And I don't think that's the case at all. I think programming requires a ton of creativity and a ton of thought. And I think coming up with those unique solutions is like a benefit, if anything. It's not a downside. And just don't let anyone make you feel that way. Be here because you want to be here, and don't leave because anyone tells you you're not good enough.
Ooh, I like that. That's great. So next, let's move on to rapid fire fill in the blanks. Are you ready?
Cool. Yeah, that was kind of, I kind of used one of my fill in the blanks there a little bit. But
that's okay. No worries. Okay. You can use it again. Feel free to.
Okay.
Number one, worst advice I've ever received is?
Okay, so the worst advice I've ever received is, Again, it comes down to like that. Like I've been told a million times by different people, like do something this specific way because mm-hmm. it's good or bad, you know, or like don't do this because it's a bad thing. Always like the worst advice I've ever received is always that. It's always like, you know, this is wrong. You have to do it this way. There's no right way to do something. And well, in my experience with design, especially with creative things, especially and with coding. So that's probably the worst advice I've ever gotten. And you get it a lot, especially in the beginning, because everyone wants to feel like an expert. And so they kind of want to guide you into like, you know what I mean? Like being, doing things their way because mm-hmm. they think it's like the next big thing. But the worst advice is always that one that I still get sometimes. But I would say, like, always ask why. Like, always ask why they do that their way or why do this way as opposed. Yeah, always ask why. Like, always ask why because then you get to, like, have a conversation. It's all about conversation, in my opinion, as far as, like, learning and progressing, being self-taught.
Number two, my first app was about?
My first app was a car wash app.
Ooh, tell me about that.
I know that sounds like totally unfeasible. It sounds unreal. So
I'm wondering how that works. Yeah.
So I left Yammer after a few years. I left with a couple senior engineers to build this thing called Cherry at the time, and it was it was like Uber for car washes. You would hit a button, and someone would show up and wash your car. And the really, really interesting thing to me about it was just like the on-demand service and like building like a real-time app and like, how do you manage a queue? You know, like how do you, that was a really interesting like technical problem for me. And it was also the first time I'd ever designed and like worked on a mobile app before, which was really cool.
Yeah.
And something that like had to be fast, you know, and it had to be like, clear, and we had to give a lot of instruction, and there was like two sides of it also, right? Because similar to Uber, we had like the car wash side, like you were ordering a car wash, and we had the car washer side where we had hired like a fleet of people. So we had two unique like experiences going on, and trying to marry them together was like a really interesting technical and experiential challenge, I would say. People always laugh when I tell them that. That the team from that, I ended up leaving and going to GitHub right before as they were acquired by Lyft.
So very nice.
Yeah, pretty interesting.
Why was it called Cherry?
The cherry red cars. We were seeing like the old school cherry red. Yeah, I think that was. I did not have the
authority over that.
Yeah. Or the logo, unfortunately. I did not have a lot of authority over either of those, but.
Number three, one thing I wish I knew when I first started to code is?
That being healthy and like getting rest and eating right can actually make you like a way sharper and fresher coder.
It's funny. My husband just gave me the thumbs up on that one as he stares me down because I'm very not good at those things.
Totally. I think that, like, honestly, like if I would have known it, I just remember feeling awful, like, in the beginning, like, and just, like not sleeping and not eating well. And honestly, like, when you're feeling great, I just feel like it allows you to solve problems so much more efficiently, which is really hard to tell yourself, right? Like, in the moment,
really
you're like, no.
Yeah. You're like, it's fine. This pizza every day is totally okay for coding.
Totally normal, yeah.
Yeah. So next, let's do some shout-outs. Do you have a couple for us?
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking about just like some tools that I really love using. One of probably the most useful tools that I use is caniuse.com. And it's really just a website that tells you a little bit of info about whether or not a CSS property is supported across different browsers, which is really useful if you are developing stuff for the web, because there's still a lot of disparity or like a lot of browser engines are still very different in how they how you rate CSS for them. And so Can I Use is such an invaluable resource, and God bless whoever made it.
Yeah, that's a really good one. I love that tool.
I love that one. And then CSS Tricks is probably my favorite. It's just everything that you've ever wanted to know about CSS. Hacks and All is on CSSTricks.com. In the same light, CodePen.com is really useful. You can do searches for like really specific CSS effects that I do a lot, just to, sometimes it's just good to get like a gut check on like whether or not you're approaching a problem from the way that you want to approach it. Again, there's like no one right way, which I think is really cool about CodePen too, is like you can see that people are doing things a million different ways. And so it's a really good anti-this is this way sort of tool, which I really love.
When I want to do something semi-interesting, I just like go to Codepen, check it out, make sure I, you know, I remember all the things. And then once I have my little mini prototype, then I'll go out and code it. So it's great for that. And we actually had Chris Coyer on the show, I think it was a couple months ago, and he did such a great job talking about CSS tricks and the community around that. And yeah, he was wonderful.
Yeah, super great guy. Yeah, and then my third one is just we've been trying a lot to at Clef actually, in being more transparent about how we build things. And I think there's some really neat blog posts, technical blog posts on our blog. So I would just like recommend checking that out. And it's just like medium.com/2-factor-authenticity, which mm-hmm. is a mouthful. But I write a ton about design there. I'm going to start writing more. That's like one of my objectives this quarter, actually, is to like write more about our process. But we just write a lot about, we wrote some stuff about React, which I love. I wrote some stuff about just like this simple CSS hack I do, but we write a lot about just like technical challenges and sort of how we overcome them. And I definitely recommend tuning in there because we have some really interesting voices, I would say.
So I have a couple sponsored shout outs to start. DigitalOcean's offering the Code Newbie community a chance to try their cloud hosting service. Use the promo code CodeNewbie and get a $10 credit to get your app up and running. They've got easy one-click solutions for Rails, Django, and much more. And if you do try it, let me know what you think. I'd love to hear it. And I have two personal shout outs. I think you will like both of them, Julie. I did it in your honor. One of them is Hack the Hood, which is a really great nonprofit that introduces low income youth of color to careers in tech. So they have these 6-week short workshops and little mini boot camps, and all these young people get really great real life experience building websites for local companies and for community members. And, you know, I think everybody in the Code Newbie community knows how important it is to have real life experience when you're trying to get into tech. And so definitely check out this organization and all the awesome work they're doing. The second one is one that I actually heard from you, Julie, in the keynote that you gave to the Code Montage, conference, like I think it was like 2 years ago or something, the Kid President's pep talk, which like just continues to make me so incredibly happy. It's just such a good video. So if you are having a rough coding day and you just need a break, you need a pep talk, you need some inspiration, please check out this video. It's very short, incredibly entertaining, and will definitely make you smile.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a funny side note. My best friend is an elementary school teacher, and she started off her school year by letting her kids watch the Kid President pep talk.
Oh, that's great.
It's amazing. Yeah. Both of those things. Amazing. Also, I just wanted to mention that like you're never too new to mentor someone else, to like help get them introduced to tech as well. And so like if you know anyone who like wants to get coding and like you have anything to offer them at all, like I would absolutely recommend becoming a mentor. It's never too soon to do that. You don't have to wait, you know, for your owl in the mail or whatever it is. Like you can start today. And I guarantee you there will be more of us than there are of everyone else. So I'm looking forward to that day.
Yeah. So if you want to join the conversation, you can join us on Code Newbie Discourse, our online forum for people excited about code, or you can chat with us every week on the Code Newbie Twitter chat. Just search for #CodeNewbie and tweet with us every Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. To learn more about that, as well as show notes on this episode, you can go to codenewbie.org/podcast. If there's a topic you want to hear about or a guest you want to hear from, send us an email, hello@codenewbie.org. Thank you again so much, Julie, for joining us. You want to say goodbye?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Feel free, anyone, reach out to me on Twitter. I'm happy to answer any questions about HTML or CSS or even some React stuff. And we're hiring at Clef, so give me a shout.
Awesome. And what is your Twitter handle? I know there's a lot of R's in it.
So it's Nerdcore, but it's spelled NRRRDCORE.
Okay, there you go. Thanks for listening. See you next week.